Micah Clarke by Arthur Conan Doyle. Dramatized for radio in 5 parts by Constance Cox. With Martin Reed as Micah, Patrick Troughton as Decimus Saxon, James Bryce as Reuben Lockerbie, and featuring Simon Ward as the Duke of Monmouth. Micah Clarke, Part 3, King Monmouth.
My eager horse, Covenant, was delighted at being on the move again, and once beyond the old walls of Taunton, I found myself out in the countryside, with my face to the north and a clear road ahead of me. All day I rode, meeting few folk, for I kept away from the main roads, pausing only for a blackjack of ale and the heel of a loaf at a wayside inn. Towards evening, I came upon the banks of the Bristol Channel, where the country grew bleaker. I thought of my mother and father, and I pondered over Decimus Saxon, his many-faced character having so much in it to be admired, and yet so much to be deplored. Turning these things over in my mind, I daydreamed upon my horse's back, when suddenly I was thrown to the ground, and lay there half-stunned.
Get the rope round his ankles! Dickon, tie his arm!
We are giants!
Bind him well, then! Peter, look to his horse! The fine beast! It'll fetch many a gold piece.
Through half-closed eyes, I now saw that a strong rope had been tied across the road from one tree to another. My captors appeared to number 7 or 8, rough-bearded fellows in fur caps and fustian jackets, pointing pistols at my head.
Up with him now. Let's get him safely into the bilbo.
I was carried down a track in a great gorge until a high tangle of brushwood barred our path. Somebody whistled, and the whole mass suddenly swung to one side as though upon a hinge, and passing through a passage, we came out into a roomy cave, lit by torches, and piled with great kegs, casks, and cases. Several more men awaited my captors.
You've got him, Captain. Was he alone?
Yeah, he was alone. Is everything ready for the shipment, Silas?
Aye. The silken laces are in those squares, and the brandy, tobacco, and schnapps are in good order.
Right. Now we have to wait for the signal. Let's take a look at our prisoner. Hark you, you dog of a land shark. See this crack in the floor of our cave? It's called the Black Drop. It goes 50 feet to the bottom, and it's going to be your grave, my young snake thief.
It'll carry him halfway to hell before the press leaves him.
It's too good for him. It's an easier death than the gallows.
Yeah. Let him have the gallows first, then. We can bury him in the Black Drop afterwards.
Oh, that's right.
Well, he's not opened his mouth since we took him. Are you dumb fellow? Find your tongue. Let's hear what your name is.
My name is Micah Clarke. Now you tell me by what right you stopped peaceful travelers on the highway.
This cutlass is our warrant. As to who we are, you know that well enough. Your name's not Clarke. It's Westhouse or Waterhouse. And you're the same cursed exciseman who swore our comrade's life away at Ilchester.
You're mistaken. I've never been in these parts before.
Oh, fine words. Fine words. Well, gauger or no, you must jump for it. Now you know the secret of our cave.
Your secret is safe with me. But I can't stop you murdering me.
Aye, that you can't, matey.
Though I'd rather have died on the field of battle than at the hands of such a pack of water rats as you.
Keep your hands on him. He seems to me to have too much spunk for an exciseman. Carries himself like a soldier. Is it possible we got the wrong man? Do you swear your name's not Waterhouse?
I've told you my name. It's Micah Clarke. I've never heard the name Waterhouse in my life.
Oh, don't take his word. Call Long John. He was with Rick when he was taken.
Ah, he'll know his face if any will. Hey, Long John.
Bring that torch
nearer.
Come
and look at this fella.
What the hell's a mess? Now, come and look at this here fella.
Oh, so what am I to look at his ugly face for?
It's Gager Westhouse.
What got Rick hanged at the assizes?
He swears he's not the exciseman.
Oh, neither is he. Well, he'd make two of the gauger and leave enough over for a magistrate. Oh, I don't know the devil you got there.
I've told you. My name is Micah Clarke, and I am a soldier.
That may be true or not, Cully. The point is, What are we to do with you?
I say hang him. Are we to risk our cape for the sake of this fella? If he's a soldier as he says he is, he'll die quick enough anyway.
By your leave, Captain.
Peter?
I say we're not a gang of murderers, but a crew of honest seamen who arm none but those who arm us. I'd as soon think a scuttle in the ship or flying the Jolly Roger is taking this young fellow's life.
A sudden silence fell upon the smugglers, and all heads were turned to the mouth of the cave. Two more ruffians appeared, carrying between them the body of a man. I thought at first he might be dead, but when they threw him on the sand, he moved, and at last sat up like a man who is but half awoken from a swoon.
It's Gager Westhouse!
Aye, that's him. I know him.
Yes, I'm Gager Westhouse. I represent the King's Law, and in its name, I arrest you all. I further declare all the contraband goods I see around me confiscate, and if there are any honest men in this company, they'll assist me in my duty.
I will assist you. We'll assist you to a hemp and rope before we've done.
Yeah, that's right.
How did you take him, Jim?
By the same rope that caught this other fella. He must have passed you just after you left. We spotted him by the revenue button on his coat. So, we brought him down.
What are we to do with the first one, Captain?
That's a problem. Hang him or let him go. Speak truth, Master Soldier. What brings you to these parts? What king do you serve? I hear there's a mutiny broke out in the west.
I serve under King Monmouth. I'm carrying dispatches to the Duke of Beaufort at Badminton.
Then I arrest you too on the charge of being a traitor. Submit to my authority.
Gag him, Jim. Where are the papers, soldier?
In my inner pocket. I beg you not to break the seal or I shall be discredited.
How are they marked, Captain?
As he says, from James, King of England, known lately as the Duke of Monmouth, to Henry, Duke of Beaufort, by the hand of Captain Micah Clark of Saxon's Regiment of Wiltshire Foot. Untie him, Jim.
Yeah. Hold out your hands, young collie.
I'm sorry we unwittingly harmed you. We're all good Protestants here. And would rather speed you than hinder you on your mission.
That's nothing more than to be free to carry it out. Could you have my horse brought to me?
Captain, I just thought...
Well?
Couldn't we help him a bit on his way? If we took him aboard, we could run up to Bristol by morning and save him from being snapped up by any land sharks on the road.
That's true. The king's horse are out beyond Weston. This way, you'll give him the slip.
How would the plan suit you, Captain?
Very well, but I should need my horse.
We'll rig up a horse stall for him. Aye, and give him oats as well. Whistle for the boat, Dickon.
Aye.
Silas, fetch the horse down. I take it, young Captain, you wouldn't be averse to some fodder.
I'd be grateful. I've not eaten since midday.
Then here's some cold junk and biscuit. And some real Jamaica to wash it down. There.
I thank you.
And if there's aught else we can do to repay you for your ill usage?
There is one thing, Captain. The excise man.
What of him?
For God's sake, don't murder him.
You're a plain speaker, Captain Clark. This is no murder, but justice. We're peaceful traders. We charge little and force our goods on no one. Yet this man and his fellows are forever yelping at our heels. He swore away the life of one of our comrades. He shall have the same treatment himself.
He is the servant of the law. He has to enforce it. Your quarrel is with the law, not with the man.
He knows our cave now. It'd be madness to let him go.
I saw it was useless to argue longer. But at a moment when the smugglers were laughing and joking together, I dropped my penknife on the sand within reach of the wretched Westhouse and saw his hand close over it. I pray God he was able to make good his escape. Within an hour, I was aboard the lugger, and Covenant was housed snugly in his stall, looking about him with great questioning eyes. After we were fairly on our way, I was offered a berth below. I needed no second invitation, but flung myself down without undressing. Within a few minutes, I'd sunk into a dreamless sleep. When I opened my eyes, I had some ado to recall where I was. But on sitting up, it was brought home to me by my head striking a low beam with a sharp rap. On the other side of the cabin, the mate was stretched full length, snoring gently. I slipped quietly from my bunk so as not to wake him and stole upon deck. There, I found we were not only becalmed, but hemmed in by a dense fog bank which rolled in thick, choking wreaths about us.
Morning, Captain Clark. As you see, we've run into a bit of a thick one, but the mate reckoned before he turned in that we weren't many miles from Bristol Town.
Oh, in that case, you can set me ashore whenever you please.
Not till the fog lifts, sir. There's only one place along here, you see, where we can land cargoes unquestioned. And right now, we can't take our bearings.
Long John, quiet. Quiet!
What's amiss, Captain?
There's a craft close by us. I heard the rattle of a rope or a kick. Don't make a sound.
Nay, there's nothing.
It's a king's ship. At seven bells. And the bosun's turning out the watch below. Ha! What did I tell you?
The white screen of vapor had suddenly rolled up like the curtain in a playhouse and uncovered a stately warship lying so close to us that we could have thrown a biscuit aboard. Nine brass cannon peeped out at us from her portholes, and high on the poop deck stood an elderly officer who at once whipped up his glass and stared at us.
Ahoy there! What letter is that?
The Lucy, sir, bound from Porlock down to Bristol with hides and tallow.
Stand ready to tack. The fog's coming down again. Call Silas, quick.
You've one of the hides with the horse still in it. Run down under our counter. We must have a closer look at you.
Aye, aye, sir.
No.
As soon as he spoke, our boom swung across, the helmsman put the wheel hard down, and we darted off into the fog like a scared seabird.
All hands to the sheets!
Well done, man. Look out for squalls, though. They'll let us have it now.
Course that one.
Won't work here, Captain.
They've brought one of your sails down.
Aye, they shoot better in the dark than ever they did in the light. There'd be more shots fired at this lugger than she could carry if she were loaded with them. Yet they've never so much as knocked the paint off before.
Oh, let it go again.
That was her last bark. We're clear now.
It's as well the breeze freshened all the same. She was lowering her boats, or I'm a Dutchman.
The fog's lifting towards the land, sir. I can see St. Austin's Point.
Steer for the three-fathom creek, then.
Aye, sir.
When we're on the other side of the point, Captain Clark, we'll land you and your horse. You'll be within a few hours' ride of your destination. Go below now and get some food. Nothing like starting with plenty of ballast in the hold.
Following the captain's advice, I went below with him and enjoyed a rough-and-ready meal. By the time we'd finished, the lugger had been run into a narrow creek with shelving sandy banks on either side. With much coaxing and pushing, Covenant was induced to take to the water and swam easily ashore while I followed in the smuggler's dinghy. Once grounded, I bade them farewell, cordially enough, and being now alone, I led Covenant to the top of the sandhill, where I might gain some idea of my position. From where I stood, I could see the spires and towers of Bristol, and as I knew the Duke's Seat was miles to the Gloucester side of the city, I struck inland, lest I might be arrested and examined should I attempt to pass the city gates. I rode on in most refreshing solitude, until suddenly...
By your leave, sir, if I might beg a word...
What is it?
Can you tell me whether his Grace of Beaufort be at Bristol or at his country house of Badminton?
I wish I could, friend. I'm bound for his presence myself.
He were in Bristol yesterday, drilling the train bands. The Duke's a loyal man for the King's cause, and it's chancy work trying to catch him.
If you know the way to Badminton, I'd be grateful if you'd let me travel with you.
I'll show you the road with pleasure, sir. What be your name?
Micah Clark.
Farmer Brown is mine. John Brown, by the register, but better known as the farmer. And what be you going to Beaufort for?
Matters, I'm afraid, that won't bear discussion.
Oh, be it so. Well, a still tongue saves many a neck. And these be times when I wouldn't whisper some of my thoughts into the ears of my old brown mare here, for fear I should see her someday standing against me in the witness box.
What manner of man is the Duke?
Hot and hasty, like all of his blood. I'm going to him on the business of a horse.
A horse?
Aye. His officers have pressed my four-year-old piebald without a by your leave for the use of the king. I'd have his grace know there's something higher than a duke, or even than a king, and that's the English law which preserves a man's goods and chattels.
I fear the present emergency may override your objection.
Think you so? Then it's enough to make her man turn wig. Why, even the roundheads pay their penny for every pellet they had. Old Oliver had a hempen rope ready for horse stealers, were they for king or parliament. Hey, this is the Duke's carriage coming up behind us. I can see his crest, but he's not in it.
How do you know?
Well, if he were, there'd be an escort behind. Hey, coachman, is his grace at Badminton?
He is, sir.
We'll be luck to catch him. He should be there in an hour or less.
Within the hour, we were in sight of Badminton, and were soon riding through the park which surrounded the house. The main doorway was flanked by lines of columns and a broad flight of marble steps. A grey-haired majordomo inquired our business, and on learning that we wished to see the Duke in person, told us that his grace would give audience to strangers at 3 o'clock. At that hour, I and the other guests, who numbered near a score, were shown into an antechamber, where we were to wait until the Duke was ready to see us. A gentleman in waiting, carrying paper and inkhorn, approached my farmer friend and myself.
Your name?
Brown. Farmer John Brown.
Isn't it?
The return of my piebald horses was taken from me, or its value.
Your name?
Micah Clark.
Isn't it?
With his grace, in private.
His grace still sees in private. You must speak it before his countenance.
My business is fit for his ears alone.
His grace holds there is no business fit only for his own ears.
My instructions...
You must arrange matters as best you can when you're shown into him. Your request will be carried to him. I warn you, it cannot be granted.
You, sir. Your name.
We had scarcely taken our seats with the other suitors when the folding doors were flung open and a stout, thick, short man of 50 or thereabouts came bustling into the room. At his heels walked a dozen men of rank, with flowing wigs and clanking swords. They had hardly passed through the opposite door before the gentleman with the list called out a name, and one after the other, the guests began to file into the great man's presence. The afternoon wore on, until eventually...
Micah Clark!
The Duke of Beaufort sat at a square table littered with piles of papers. Beside him stood his scrivener, taking notes at his direction, while other councillors stood behind him, or took snuff together in the deep recesses of the window.
Captain Micah Clark. What is your wish, Captain?
One which it would be better if I could deliver privately to your grace.
Oh, you're the one who desired private audience. Well, Captain, these are my council, and they are as myself, so we may look upon ourselves as alone. What I may hear, they may hear. So state your business.
Your grace, if your grace...
Oh, zounds, man, don't stammer and boggle out with it.
I was instructed to hand this packet to your grace.
What? What is this?
As the Duke read the superscription, he gave a sudden start of surprise and agitation, and made a movement almost to hide the packet. Then, as if he'd quickly formed a resolution, he broke the seals and rapidly read the contents.
Oh! what think you, gentlemen? What think you this private message has proved to be? A letter from that traitor Monmouth, none else. Calling upon me to resign my allegiance to my natural sovereign and draw my sword on his behalf. If I do this, I am to have his gracious favor and protection. If not, I incur banishment and ruin. He thinks Beaufort's loyalty is to be bought like a packman's ware, or bullied out of him by ruffling words. The descendant of John of Gaunt is to render fealty to the brat of a wandering slave woman.
The man is mad, Your Grace.
Mad indeed to have raised his hopes to such heights. How dare he presume to send me such a message? Is it because he's drawn a few hundred chaw bacons from the plough that he ventures to hold such language to the President of Wales? But you gentlemen, will be my witnesses as to the spirit in which I received it.
We can preserve your grace from all danger of slander on that point.
Yes. But you, sir, you, Micah Clark, who are you that you dare bring such a message to Badminton? You took leave of your senses, surely, before you set out on such an errand.
I did what I had promised to do, Your Grace. The rest is no concern of mine.
No concern? You hear that, gentlemen? You'll find it very close concern indeed. So close as to put an end to all other concerns in your life. Call in the halberdiers.
Come in, the halberdiers!
Now, fellow, what have you to say for yourself?
I'm in the hands of God, Your Grace, here as elsewhere. There's nothing more to be said.
Ah, but a great deal more to be done. Seize this man and secure his hands. Take down this fellow's statement, Master Scrivener.
Yes, Your Grace.
Now, sirrah, it may not be known to you, but I have the king's warrant to deal with all traitors without either jury or judge during these troubles. You bear over a commission, I understand, in the rebellious body, which is here described as Saxon's Regiment of Wiltshire Foot. Now, speak the truth for your neck's sake.
I shall speak the truth, for I can do no other. I command a company in that regiment.
And who is this Saxon fellow?
I'll answer all that concerns myself. Not a word which may reflect upon others.
Our pretty gentleman must needs stand upon the niceties of honor after taking up arms against the king. I tell you, sir, your honor is in such a parlous state already, you may well throw it over and look to your safety. The sun is sinking in the west. Before it sets, your life too may have set forever.
I'm the keeper of my own honor, Your Grace. As to my life, I should not be standing here now if I had a great dread of losing it. But there is something I should tell, Your Grace.
Ah, now it comes.
Should you, or any of your household, come into his power, my colonel has sworn to exact upon you a return for any evil that may befall me.
What? Threats now, eh, gentlemen?
It is not a threat, Your Grace, but a warning. I know him to be a man of his word.
Your colonel, as you call him, may find it hard enough to save himself soon. How many men has Monmouth with him?
Your Grace should know better than to ask me that.
Ah, you're brave now, fellow. But courage has been known to evaporate at the sight of the gallows. Still, we need information before we hang you. Gentlemen, how shall we make this traitor speak?
Shall we take him to the strong room for questioning, Your Grace?
No. No, to the old bottler dungeon. Take him away. Call in the next suppliant.
I was led between the guard, through endless passages and corridors, until we reached an ancient wing. Here, in the corner turret, was a small, high-ceilinged room, mouldy and damp, with a single long slit in the wall to admit light. A wooden couch and a single chair formed the whole of the furniture. Into this I was shown by the captain of the guard, who stationed a man at the door, then freed my wrists.
Keep your heart up, friend. Hanging's but a choke and a struggle. We had the same job to do a day or two since, and the man scarcely groaned. You won't fall into the hands of a bungler.
If only I could let Monmouth know his letters were delivered.
My faith, and how they were delivered. Now there, lad, if I may say so, you were unwise. When you saw the Duke was enraged, you should have spoken him fair. Some little talk of the rebels' numbers and dispositions might have saved you.
You, a soldier, would have me betray my cause?
Well, well, your neck's your own. If it pleases you to take a leap into nothing, it's a pity to thwart you. But His Grace commanded you should have a chaplain. I must bring him to you.
I want no priest to help me make my peace with God.
No? Well, if that be your choice. But I warn you, you'd best have spiritual help. There's something worse than warder or prisoner in this cell. Nothing less than the devil.
The devil?
2 years ago, lad, Hector Marot, the highwayman, was shut up in this very dungeon. I myself was on guard that night and saw him sitting in that bed just as you are now. At 12 o'clock I had occasion to look in, as my custom is, with the hope of cheer in his lonely hours. And lo, he was gone.
Gone?
Aye, You may well stare. My eyes had never been off his door. And you can judge what chance there was of his getting through the window. Yet this cell was empty. So if the devil didn't run away with him, who did? Will you have the chaplain now?
No. But I thank you.
As you will. Oh, should you have occasion to ask for me, I'm Captain Sinclair of the Duke's household. I shall be on guard in the corridor. Be of good heart. As I said, hanging's naught but a choke and a struggle.
My first impulse on being left alone was to search for any possible means of escape. But the closest scrutiny failed to show any nook or cranny where a rat could have escaped, far less a man. Gradually, the light in the cell faded. I was about to try to sleep when a sudden noise aroused me.
Captain Clark! Captain Clark, be you there?
Who's that? Where are you?
Hush, Nana. Speak low. Climb on the chair and you'll see me. I'm at the window.
Farmer Brown!
Aye.
How did you know I was here?
Why, man, I knows as much of this here house as Beaufort does himself. It's not the first time I've spoke through this window, but, quick, what can I do for you?
Can you let my friends know what has happened to me?
To be sure, lad. Who's to be told?
Send to Captain Lockerby, who's serving in Colonel Saxon's regiment in Monmouth's army. Ask him to break it to my parents as gently as he can.
I'll send my best man and my fleetest horse this very night.
Oh, thank you.
I've got a file here, lad, if that'll help you. But you're a bit of a size to get through this here slit. Years ago, there used to be a hole in the roof. Yeah, look up and see if you can see it.
There's no sign of any opening.
There was one, I know. My brother Roger swung himself down once with the rope.
Hole or no hole, it's 20 feet up. I've no means of climbing to it. Don't stay longer. You may find yourself in trouble.
Oh, good boy then, brave lad. Be assured, your message shall be took.
Here's your supper, friend. Take it down, appetite or no. It'll give you strength to play the man when your time comes.
Thank you.
Is there aught else I can do for you?
Thank you, no, Captain. After I've eaten, I shall try to sleep.
That's wise. It'll help you to make a good end. They say it was beautiful to see my Lord Russell die upon Tower Hill. Maybe folks will say the same of you. Good night.
Strangely, I was able to finish the food and felt the better for it. Then, stretching myself upon the couch, fell into a heavy sleep. I was awoken by what sounded like the creaking of hinges. I sat up and gazed around me. All was impenetrably dark. Then the noise was repeated. At the same time, a dull yellow light streamed down from above, issuing from a thin crack in the arched roof. As I watched, the crack widened, and I saw a head looking down at me. Then, the knotted end of a stout rope was passed through the aperture and came dangling down to the floor beside me.
Climb! Heathen!
I needed no second bidding. I went up the rope hand over hand, and squeezing my shoulders through the hole, succeeded in reaching the room above. There, I found myself in the presence of a heavily cloaked figure, with a hat pulled down over his eyes.
Speak low, my friend. I would prefer your guards not to know the means by which you've been spirited away.
Thank you for your clemency, Your Grace.
How the devil do you know me?
Your Grace's voice is not easily forgotten.
Oh, especially when it talks of hemp and dungeons, eh? Why in heaven's name, lad, did you deliver such papers in the presence of my council?
Your Grace refused to see me alone.
True, but I'm besieged by so many who have naught of importance to say to me. How could I know? Never mind. Tell me, what chance has Monmouth?
He's met with nothing but success so far.
Against the militia?
It'll be another thing when he has trained troops to deal with. The king's party are active. It's mighty opposition.
The cause is good.
Aye, the cause. Always the cause. Causes do not win battles. Listen. I would have you tell Monmouth I wish him well in his enterprise, and would help him were I not beset by those who watch me closely and would denounce me if I were to show my true thoughts.
Then he has no hope from you?
No, not so. Tell him, should he move his army into these parts, I may openly declare myself for him.
Why not now, Your Grace?
To do so now would be to ruin the fortunes of my house without in any way helping him. Can you bear that message?
I'll do so, Your Grace.
Now you must go. The guard will be changed soon and your escape discovered. Drop the rope through the window. When you reach the ground, take the gravel path and follow it till you reach the high trees which skirt the park. The seventh tree has a bough which hangs over the boundary wall. On the other side, you'll find my valet waiting with your horse. Ride hard to the south. By morning, you should be well out of danger's way.
And my sword?
All your property is there. Let Monmouth know I've used you as kindly as possible.
And how will Your Grace explain my escape?
The soldiers will swear it was another instance of the devil. Now, hurry.
Adieu, Your Grace. And thank you.
Remember my message.
I slid down the rope and sped through the park and over the wall, where I found my faithful Covenant awaiting me. I strapped my sword once more to my side and galloped off as fast as four willing feet could carry me. All night I rode hard without drawing bridle. At Axbridge, I learned from a grazier with whom I travelled for a while that the whole of Somerset had now raised its standard for Monmouth, and that King James's forces had retired until such time as help should reach them. When I saw the town of Taunton beneath me, I pulled up for a flagon of beer for myself and a sieveful of oats for Covenant, which put fresh mettle into both of us. And we were jogging down the side of the hill when a company of horse came galloping up, heading straight towards me.
Reuben! Jabez!
Micah! It's Micah!
Bugs Buddykins, man. We thought you were in prison. We're leading company of horse into Beaufort's country to burn down his house if you come to harm.
Did you get my message?
But 2 hours ago, a farm fellow brought it.
I came away with my wig half grizzled and found friend Lockerbie got leave to go north with these troopers. How have you fared?
Both well and ill. But I have a message for King Monmouth.
He'll be on thorns to see you. I tell you, lad, it would have gone ill with Badminton had you been heard. Turn about, lads! Back to camp!
You have performed your mission well, Captain Clark, like a fearless and zealous messenger. How say you, my Lord Grey?
He has indeed had his share of adventure. You say Beaufort gave you nothing in writing?
Nothing, my lord.
And his private message was that he wished us well and would join us if we were in his country.
That was the effect, my lord.
Yet you say that before his council he put offence upon me and made light of my just claims to the throne.
Yes, your majesty.
He would stand on both sides of the hedge at once. It may be as well, however, that we should move his way and give him the chance of declaring himself.
Your Majesty.
Colonel Saxon.
We had, as your Majesty will remember, already determined to march towards Bristol and attack the town.
The works are being strengthened, sire. I saw the labourers at work on the ramparts as I passed. And there are 5,000 of the Gloucestershire train bands within.
May I speak, sir?
Sir Stephen.
If we gain Beaufort, we shall gain the whole town of Bristol. There's already a strong body of godly folk therein who would rejoice to see a Protestant army within their gates. If we could beleaguer it, we could count upon their help.
Hagel and Blitzen, how can we talk of sieges and beleaguers when we have not the breaching pieces in the whole army?
The Lord will find us the breaching pieces.
Aye.
Did not the Lord not breach the towers of Jericho without the aid of gunpowder? What is there he cannae do? Aye, you may smile, Colonel Saxon, and Lord Grey and his likes may sneer at words of piety, but I say it is you and those like you who will bring down God's anger upon this army.
Is it your wish, Your Majesty, that I and those who like myself counsel caution should be insulted at your very council board? How long are we to be subjected to this insolence?
It is insolence.
Because we prefer to practice our religion in the privacy of our hearts, rather than at street corners with these Saracens.
That's more a relic than the Lord.
Be silent! Silence! Is this the extent of my authority, gentlemen, that you babble and brawl as though my council chamber were a Fleet Street pothouse? Is this your respect for our person? I tell you now, if any man be proved to have stirred up strife amongst my following on the score of religion, I shall know how to deal with him. Let each preach to his own, but not to the flock of his neighbor. I shall now confer privately with Lord Grey and Master Wade upon what action we shall take. This council is dismissed.
Your English are a strange people, Colonel Saxon.
Leaven is working. Something will come out of all this.
I can see nothing come of it but disorder and weakness.
Nay, good soldiers will come out of it. This arguing breeds fanatics. And fanatics are the stuff of which conquerors are made. How say you, friend Bowser?
I say there are no two of you think alike on any subject. Since I set foot in this country, my head has been in a whirl to understand what it is you want. One cry King James, another cry King Manus, another King Jesus. Before I've got to the end of one man's tale, another will come in with another story. I am bewildered.
All will become plain to you before long. We must move on Bristol tomorrow.
Monday, the 21st of June, broke very dark and blustery, with a constant sputter of rain. Yet, by the hour appointed, the army was moving out by the eastern gate. In numbers, it had increased to nigh on 8,000, and the men were well fed and light of heart. All day we trudged along roads that were quagmires, over our ankles in mud. By evening, we had made our way to Bridgewater, and set off again next morning in even worse weather. All that day we were splashing through mud and mire, the raindrops shining on the gun barrels and dripping from the heavy-footed horses. And the following day was still wet and inclement, so the army made only a short march to Wells.
Oh, we stop again. God in heaven, will we never get on? We lose all our advantage.
The men are tried to the limit of their endurance, Colonel Bowser.
Limit? If they have reached the limit now, how will they fight?
The better for a rest.
Oh, boy, boy. Did you not mark the glitter of arms and helmets as we came along the road? There are bodies of King James's troops on either side of us. Did you not see them send a platoon to our rear to make a raid on the baggage?
Colonel Saxon's men drove them off.
This time, yes. But another time, I say by now we should be in Bristol.
At length, by marching all next day, we came within 2 leagues of the city, and by morning the rain clouds had at last cleared. Reuben and I rode up one of the green hills which rose behind the camp, in the hope of gaining some sight of the enemy. Our men we left lying upon the grass, some trying to light fires with damp sticks, others laying out their clothes to dry in the sunshine.
The enemy come now, Micah. Would we ever hope, do you think?
Ah, not a chance. Half my men have worn their boots away and are going barefoot.
Some of mine have wound handkerchiefs round their feet. As for their pikes, they're so red with rust. At least they don't glitter and give us away to the enemy. How wet are you, Micah?
I think my clothes have gone to pulp. I'm not even sure my sword isn't rusted in the scabbard.
You better try it. You may need it. Miracles to me is Sir Gervas. No matter what the rest of us look like, he turns out every morning as if he were going to court. How the deuce does he do it?
I think he must sit up half the night. How he gains his sleep is a mystery to me.
There was a time when I was called Plump Reuben. I'm likely to be Skeleton Reuben before I see heaven again. I've had too little that's solid and too much that's liquid. I swear, I could be wrung out and hung up to dry in one of these bushes.
Well, if we're wet, at least King James's troops must be wetter. We've had all the shelter there was.
I never think it's any comfort when you're starving to know that someone else is the same. I give you my word, Micah. I took in one holding me sword belt on Monday, 2 on Tuesday, 1 yesterday and 1 today. I'm thawing like an icicle in the sun.
Well, never mind. As far as winning the hearts of fair maidens goes, you've outstripped us all.
Oh.
What happened while I was at badminton?
No.
Did you speak to Sir Stephen about Mistress Ruth?
I've spoken to him three times. Or tried to. The first time, he was so busy filling ammunition cases, I couldn't get his attention. The second time, I told him I'd come to Cravey's granddaughter's end, and he just stared at me and said, "Which end?" And the third time, he flashed out at me that this was no time for such follies, and I might ask him again when King Monmouth was on the throne.
Oh, that sounds as good as a promise if the cause is successful.
Maybe. But there's that apprentice of his, that John Derrick. I tell you, Micah, that fellow means no good. I warned him, as he valued his life, to keep himself away from Mistress Ruth.
Well, and how did he take your warnings?
Snarled out a few words of godly hatred and slunk away.
For God's sake, Reuben!
Huh?
Look there!
The king's troops! They're attacking our horse!
From the Somerset bank of the Avon, two troops of our horse had been advancing with intent to establish outposts on our eastern flank. But even as we looked, King James's troops wheeled out into the open and dashed down with a whirl of steel upon our unprepared squadrons. For a space, our gallant rustics held their own, and the dense mass of men and horses swayed backwards and forwards, whirling sword blades playing above them in flashes of angry light. Then, the dense throng was split asunder, and the royal cavalry came pouring through and swerved off to right and left, through hedge and over ditches, stabbing and hacking at our fleeing horsemen. The whole scene, with the stamping horses, tossing manes, shouts of triumph and despair, was to us on the hill like some wild vision. So abruptly did it come, and so swiftly go. The sharp bugle call summoned our enemies back into the road, where they formed up and galloped away. Nothing was left to mark the course of the hell which had broken so suddenly upon us, but the dreadful litter of dying men and horses.
Our men had no hope! No hope!
Reuben, look! There! One of James's men separated from his squadron.
An officer, surely. I think he wants to carry on the fight by himself.
Oh, let's give him a taste of rebel warfare.
How?
That path. We can cut him off.
You're right. Do it, Micah!
We dashed down a gorge, out onto the road, and met the solitary officer face to face. He drew his sword, snatched a pistol from his holster, and, gripping his horse's bridle between his teeth, charged down upon us at the top of his speed.
Take him on the left, Micah!
As our horses met, he cut fiercely at me, firing at Reuben at the same time. His cut, however, fell short, and throwing my arm round his neck, I plucked him from his horse and threw him across my saddle.
Let me go, you rustic!
Can you help, Micah?
If you struggle, my friend, my comrade here will give you a tap on the head with his sword hilt.
Where are you taking me?
To the camp, as our prisoner.
For Christ's sake, put me down! Don't carry me in this plight through your grinning yokels!
If you give me your word to walk between us...
Yes, all right, all right.
I'll make sure you do.
I know that voice. And that massive frame. I have it. You were at the inn at Salisbury when there was a disputed card. My young lieutenant threw upon an old soldier who was riding with you.
And being defeated set the dogs on us.
Well, I'm right glad you came off safely from the bloodhounds. I myself thought it was a scurvy trick. You, I think I remember, are Captain Micah Clark.
Yes.
My name's Ogilvy. Major Ogilvy of the Horse Guards Blues.
I remember you well. You'll find Colonel Saxon in the camp. No doubt you'll shortly be exchanged with some prisoner of ours.
Much more likely to have my throat cut. Our General Feversham is taking no prisoners. Monmouth is likely to pay him back in his own coin.
Captain, King Monmouth orders you at once to join his council.
Right. I leave Major Ogilvy in your charge, Reuben. See, he's treated with all courtesy.
Oh, right, Micah.
We shall meet again, Major.
God grant it be so, Captain.
King Monmouth was gathered with his council beneath a clump of trees which bordered the Avon. He was staring in dismay across the river, where we could see a great gathering of King James's horse and foot.
You see, Captain Clark, the enemy has massed his forces to prevent our progress. Some new mishap is forever at our heels. Providence would seem to be against us.
Not Providence, Your Majesty, but our own negligence.
How so, Colonel
if
Saxon?
If we'd advanced last night on Bristol, we might have been on the right side of the ramparts now.
But we had no notion the enemy's foot was so near.
Let us advance on Bristol, Your Majesty. Put our trust in the Lord God. If it be his mighty will that we should take it, then we shall enter into it.
What say you, gentlemen?
I say it is madness. You had the chance, and you did not take it.
Here is an army of us, and here, as I can judge, 5,000 men on the right side of the river. We are on the wrong side. Yet you talk of crossing and beleaguering Bristol when we have neither breech pieces or spades with the enemy at our rear.
With the help of our Lord.
The Lord helps those that help themselves. I agree with Bowser. Why should Bristol make terms with us when they can see from their ramparts the king's army waiting to help them? As Bowser says, it's madness.
What would you advise then, Colonel Bowser?
To get across the river and come to handgrips with them before they can get help from the town.
What are we here for if it is not to fight? If we win, the town must fall to us. If we lose, we have made a bold stroke for it. Can do no more.
Is that your opinion also, Colonel Saxon?
Only if we can fight to advantage, sire. And we can scarcely do that by crossing the river on a single narrow bridge in the face of the enemy's force.
True, true.
I should advise that we destroy this Kensha Bridge and march down this southern bank in the hope of forcing a fight in a position of our own choice.
I agree. We've not yet summoned Bath to our standard. Let us march in that direction and send a trumpet to the governor.
There's yet another plan, Your Majesty.
Sir Stephen?
We might hasten to Gloucester, cross the Severn there, so march through Worcestershire and into Shropshire, and thence to Cheshire. Your Majesty has many friends in those parts.
No.
Silence! What am I to do? In the midst of all this conflicting advice, when I know that not only my own success, but the lives of all these poor faithful peasants and craftsmen depend on my decision. Ah, look. Here comes Lord Grey. Sir, you come in time to give us your counsel.
Your Majesty?
Some say cross the river, others blow up the bridge.
Rush
and
the
my
Lord.
Good mare to press on to Worcestershire.
I say stand and fight.
With all humbleness, Your Majesty, I should suggest that since there are only a few of the enemy's cavalry on this side of the river,
with whom we can easily deal.
Exactly. That we blow up the bridge and move onwards to Bath, and so into Wiltshire, which we know to be friendly.
Right. So be it, gentlemen. To Bath. We march in half an hour. To your post.
So our army was on the move once again. 500 horse with the Devonshire militiamen were in the van, myself and Reuben at their head. After them came the Sailor Regiment, the North Somerset Men, the 1st Taunton Regiment, the Mendip and Bagworthy Miners, the Lace and Wool Workers of Honiton, Wellington and Ottery St. Mary, and the Woodmen, Graziers and Marshmen of the Quantock District. All with one voice and one heart to make Monmouth king. And yet, in my own mind, though I struggled to suppress it, was the feeling that we were all engaged upon a hopeless venture. That was part 3 of Micah Clark by Arthur Conan Doyle, dramatized in 5 parts by Constance Cox. With Martin Reed as Micah, Patrick Troughton as Decimus Saxon, James Bryce as Reuben Lockerbie, and featuring Simon Ward as the Duke of Monmouth. Sir Javis Jerram was played by Mark Straker, the Duke of Beaufort by John Rye, Farmer Brown by Peter Tuddenham, Captain Murgatroyd by Jack McKenzie, Mayor Timewell by William Eagle, Captain Bowser by Geoffrey Collins,
Dr. Ferguson by Henry Stanton. Major Ogilvy by Gregory de Polney. Lord Grey by David Sinclair. Silas by John Forbes Robertson. Captain Sinclair by Michael Jays. And Long John by Clive Panto. Micah Clark was directed by David Johnston.